Welcome to Calling It. Welcome back. It's been a while. We've had some technical difficulties for the last 2 weeks. We are recording this on Thursday, September 9th, around 5 o'clock, powered as always by CLNS Media. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We didn't miss anything big, Lebowitz, right there those last 2 weeks. Nothing happened.
No, it's been very, very boring. By the way, it's September 19th, not the 9th.
I can't read. I forgot how to read the last 2 weeks, so there's that.
Well, there has been a lot going on. That was a sarcastic question you asked, or maybe that jumbled your brain a little bit.
A lot going on, yes.
So, yeah, but it's been, it's really, really since the day before opening night, our opening day for the NFL that Sunday. It's just been nonstop, especially in our region. So there's definitely a ton to unpack in this episode.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we're going to start with the New England Patriots, and there's a million different ways we can go. They open their season, they're 2-0, they look like a wagon. They sign Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown gets accused of sexual assault and rape, and it's just been, I can tell you, being down there, it is. Impossible to keep track of everything. It has been absolutely wild. I didn't even get into maybe the biggest issue with the team right now. The offensive line is a mess and just all of it. But just give me one quick thought on the Patriots to start. We need a jumping off point. It can be Brown related or not, whatever.
So I when they first signed Antonio Brown, I was for it. I think the guy has a lot of baggage, of course, and the way that he handled the situation with both the Raiders and the Steelers left a lot to be desired. But I was still for it, given the talent. Then the news came out the following week, and I'm not someone to deem somebody guilty before there's a trial, and it is a civil lawsuit, so either way, he can't be deemed guilty. But given everything surrounding this guy and all of the controversies he's been a part of, and how people claim that he doesn't pay them who have worked for him in the past, and how a doctor said, you know, AB farted in his face. There's just a lot of stuff to really go through. And the Patriots never really needed it. So although at first I was on board with this, I don't know. I think that it was a bad move in hindsight. Obviously, $9 million guaranteed to cut him right now would probably not make a lot of sense. You've already committed to him. But it wasn't necessary. It was not necessary, especially when you could have put that money towards, I don't know, an offensive lineman. There are bigger needs for this team, and I'm not one to criticize Bill Belichick and the decisions he makes very often, but this one I can't help but question.
Well, look, I understand I understand why they signed him at the time, because you can never have too much talent on your football team. He was available. This is a player Belichick has loved for a long time. I'm torn whether or not they knew. Whether or not they did their research and they knew that Antonio Brown, that this was going to come up, because from all accounts, they didn't. But this is the most meticulous, detail-oriented organization in sports. It's kind of hard to believe they wouldn't know anything. Now that this is all out, it's way too much. I even think Belichick regrets it at this point. I really do. I don't think he wants to deal with this and taking – I'm sorry, 1 second. I'm waving my arms. I got my headset tangled in the cord. There we go. I think that, Belichick doesn't want to deal with the questions about this. He doesn't want this distraction. He doesn't want to have to monitor it, any of it. He just wants to deal with football. But the fact of the matter is, now that Antonio Brown is here, and based on the fact that they talked to his accuser for 10 hours on Monday, and then he was allowed to talk to the media today, I'm guessing he's here to stay for the year. I don't think there's a suspension coming. This is just an educated guess. I don't know anything. But we'll see. Maybe all that other stuff will settle, and whether it should or shouldn't is a separate conversation, but maybe that stuff will settle and we can just focus on the football element of all this. But yeah, it's certainly a shame, because it's taking away from a team that is an absolute wagon. And even without Antonio Brown, you know, the offensive line's an issue, but if they can get that all straightened out, it has the potential to be a historically great team, not just great Patriots historic, but NFL historic great, just so much talent all over the field.
And obviously the other question is whether or not this guy will you know, stay on the course. So far,
right?
You know, even with all of the extra stuff outside of the game, he hasn't been a distraction on social media.
He spoke today and he towed the company line perfectly. So there's that.
And that's a good thing, which means he's buying in. But again, with a guy like this, with his track record, can you have confidence that that will keep up, that he's going to continue to buy in, and that there won't become a point where he's frustrated? And I do think that this thing will pass, and he'll continue to play football, and the NFL probably won't end up doing anything, because usually these sort of things result in a settlement outside of the civil lawsuit.
He did turn down the settlement, though, the $2 million settlement.
But there was still a conversation there, which shows you that there's wiggle room. And I think eventually there will be an
agreement. I wouldn't call $2 million wiggle room, even for him. Well, I don't know, $2 million.
Okay, it's not going to be – he's not willing to pay that much. But I guarantee you that something will happen on that front. Again, usually that's how these things go when high-profile people like AB are in these types of lawsuits. But again, beyond that, will this personality, will one of the strongest personalities be able to continue to not be a distraction outside of all the extra stuff? We've compared him to Corey Dillon. We've compared him to Randy Moss. Those guys didn't bring on nearly as much baggage as AB is. So I think this is a completely separate situation. And this is really, untouched territory for a guy like Bill Belichick. But again, when you have Belichick, when you have Tom Brady in the locker room, usually guys will follow and you can make it work. And I think one thing is evident. It's that right now, today, again, September 19th, Antonio Brown has a lot of respect for those guys, and he's not willing to throw that away. And I think deep down he understands the optics of him, you know, tarnishing a relationship with the Patriots potentially. So right now it looks like it's working. When you're, you know, outscoring your opponent 76-3 through the first 2 weeks of the season, obviously something's going well. But again, you're kind of on a tightrope, and you got to make sure that you don't fall off. And with AB, you just never know.
Oh, I will see with all that. But again, outside of that, I think losing him, even with the cap implications, this team's still so good, and they have so much talent. And you look at this defense and what this defense has accomplished. And I know the Dolphins are the Dolphins. That is a bad football team. You cannot take much from that. But I think the Steelers, at least when they had Ben, that's a good team. That's a good team. That's a good offense. He held 3 points there in the opener. Now the Steelers are going to be trash going forward, but they have the luxury of being able to take on this massive distraction, this massive undertaking of conforming Antonio Brown, getting him in the offense, all of it, because that defense is so good. And when you talk about historically great, I mean, Stephon Gilmore, happy birthday to him. He's the best cornerback in football right now. J.C. Jackson is playing at a high level on the other side. Jonathan Jones, PFF, has been one of the best corners in the league so far. And that defensive front has just gotten after it. I know it's only two games. And frankly, we're going to have to put a disclaimer on the Jets game, too, because the Jets are so damn bad at this point. But this defense is something else. This defense is special.
Absolutely. It's the best in the NFL. And you'll see that at the end of the year. They're going to lead the league in a lot of categories. And they're meshing. I think the fact that you have so many returning players and a couple great additions like, you know, Michael Bennett, it's a huge thing, and you can really see it. Week one, they were playing together in stride. And again, Jamie Collins, another guy they added, and it seems like that he's taking advantage of this opportunity, and he's playing really well, and he's, you know, worth every dollar that they've spent on him. And match that with the fact that through the first 7 weeks of the season, they got a cupcake schedule.
Well, I mean, the whole AFC East is bad. Even the Chiefs, Mahomes is playing banged up. Tyreek Hill has been hurt. You know, Mahomes is playing hurt. Tyreek Hill hasn't seen the field. And the rest of the AFC, even the rest of the league, you look at Breeze going down. Mm-hmm. Roethlisberger, obviously, we talked about earlier. Cam Newton is banged up. He might not play on Sunday. Wentz has been taking shots. You want to throw in Andrew Luck before the season, retiring essentially due to injury. Like, all of these quarterbacks around the league are just dropping like flies. And here are the Patriots with one of the best teams they've ever had. They may not need it to beat some of these scrubs.
I mean, they're standing so far ahead of any other team in the league.
Sam Darnold got mono. How much people always talk about, it always falls the Patriots' way. They always get lucky. Something always happens. And I used to push that aside, but Sam Darnold got mono. How does the quarterback at USC go through college without getting mono? I got mono in college. Like, and I know that he had a girlfriend the whole time, whatever. If he was sticking to that one girlfriend, He didn't do being the quarterback of USC football correctly. I'm sorry. But we've all seen Blue Mountain State. We know how this works. How the hell does Sam Darnold at the University of Southern California go, what was he there, 3 years, 4 years, without getting mono? And then to be the quarterback of the New York Jets for a year and a half. I don't believe that. That is unreal to me.
Well, New York's a dirty city, so I think that tells you what you need to know. I mean, I don't know. It is the worst thing to get. I've never gotten it, unfortunately, but I know plenty of people who have. And it's not a 1 week, a 4 day sickness. This is a multi-week thing. But either way, I think people were too high in the Jets in the first place. The Dolphins stink. The Bills are meh. Maybe they're 500 this year.
They beat the Jets and the Giants. I'm not too in on the 2-0 Bills. So.
But the problem is people, specifically Jets fans, for some reason, they thought that team had the potential to win 10 games this year. I said 5-11 from the start. I just want to put that on the record. I stick with that.
Bills?
No, I'm talking about the Jets.
Oh, the Jets. Sorry.
They have a young quarterback who has promise. He has potential. I think Darnold could be a really good QB one day. But CJ Mosley and Le'Veon Bell aren't enough to put this team over that hump. And I think regardless, they were going to stink. But anyway, the entire AFC is pretty much garbage this year. The one thing I am looking out for, though, is where Jalen Ramsey lands. And if he does go to the Kansas City Chiefs and he kind of helps out that defense, that's bad news for the Patriots. They're still the favorites, obviously, but you have a shutdown corner on that team for the Chiefs. That means Antonio Brown's potentially ineffective for a game during the regular season and potentially in the playoffs if they end up meeting there as well. I'm not saying that makes them the favorites, but it could definitely play a factor. And that's right now what I'm looking at, because I'm not buying into the Ravens being the second best team. No, it's still the Chiefs. No. It's still the Chiefs.
I don't even think the Ravens are that good. Lamar Jackson's hitting open receivers. He's doing the bare minimum an NFL quarterback should do, which is still better than last year. But he's not making any dynamic throws or anything. Again, that game he lit it up, that game he was so great against the Dolphins, we can't count those. The report came out a couple hours ago. The league's actually going to look into the Dolphins for tanking, which is unprecedented. There's been a number of teams that have tanked openly, and the league hasn't said a thing about it. This Dolphins team is – the Dolphins may end up after this year with the best and worst team in NFL history, because the 72 Dolphins, obviously, only undefeated team, and – the 2019 Dolphins, they literally may end up on both sides of the spectrum when we're all said and done here. That team is bad. I mean, those are guys that do not belong in the NFL. That team is bad. And I feel bad for Brian Flores, and I'm sure this is coming from above, and they want to tank to get to it and get the draft picks, and they're setting themselves up nicely. They might have two top five picks between their own and the Steelers pick they got for Minkah Fitzpatrick, but that is brutal this year how bad that team is.
Yeah, I mean it's not good. It's unfair to the players, I think, first and foremost. If you're a coach and you want to try to create any type of atmosphere, a winning atmosphere, something that players want to be a part of, starting a season the way they have and potentially going 0-16, which I think is on the table, is not the way to do it. I don't know. It's a problem. You see it in the NBA a lot. I don't like seeing it in the NFL. And the fact that players are openly asking to be traded, and that this has become a huge issue for just anyone who kind of wants to win, and anyone who wants to be a part of, a good football team, I think that's a problem. It's a problem. And the NFL should try to make sure that this sort of thing isn't something that happens consistently. But it's also something we haven't really seen done, at least as blatantly as what we're seeing in Miami. So I don't know. It's going to be a long season down there on South Beach.
I am all against the NBAification of the NFL. I think they need to be careful and make sure that doesn't happen too much. Because like you said, between the players requesting trades and they're all getting them and all this constant player movement, the tanking, all of it. We've talked a number of times on the show about how much the NBA sucks as a league to follow because players don't stay on teams and they're constantly moving around and half the league just sucks on purpose and all of that. The NFL can't let that happen. There's a reason that they are the best product, and it's because every game, even the best team versus the worst team, is so competitive, and that idea of any given Sunday – You can't let that go away if you're the NFL. You absolutely cannot let that go away.
I also think it's just bad strategy. I think in the NBA it makes sense, at least, because you only got five guys on the court at one time, and getting that superstar can be huge. And obviously, if you get a quarterback at the number one pick, and you know he's the next great thing, he's the next Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady, whatever, that does help you. I'm not saying it doesn't, but you know, you have a 53-man roster. You have 22 starters between your offense and your defense. You can't. I just don't think that's an effective way to really build a winning football team. So I think the bigger thing that they're doing is trading away guys like Laremy Tunsil and bringing in those assets, obviously trading away Fitzpatrick, which definitely helps. But again, I think it's going to be a few years, a multi-year process for that Dolphins team. And honestly, they're probably just trying to buy time until Brady retires. And I think that at the end of the day, isn't the worst thing in the world, because they don't have a shot until he does.
Right, but they don't need to be this bad.
Definitely.
Like, this is overdoing it. This is aggressive. But, I mean, there you go. You might have two generational teams in the same division in the same year, but they're generational for different reasons. So we'll see how it all plays out. It's only 2 weeks. A lot can happen. Dolphins-Jets. Actually, let me pull up on the schedule real quick when that is. But Dolphins-Jets may actually end up being must-watch football this year. Because there's two games, but hypothetically, if the same team wins both of those games, and I think that the Dolphins are the only team that can challenge the Jets, and vice versa, I think that, you know, you could be looking at a couple of 0-16 bowls there. I think that's a real possibility. So let's see here. Dolphins Jets first game is, well, they don't play till way later in the year. So we will, so later in the year, won't even load on my phone. Let's go to the computer here and see. I mean, this is going to be an interesting game. We got Jets, Dolphins, November 3rd is the first one in Miami, and then December 8th. So both kind of later in the season. That could be interesting. All right, let's move on real quick before we get to the final thought. We had a bit of a reunion at Fenway. Mike Yastrzemski, the grandson of Red Sox great Carl Yastrzemski, in town with the San Francisco Giants. He hit his home run. It was apparently a very emotional moment. Lovitz, I'll let you go first because it's an Andover boy, so that's your territory.
It's an Andover boy, St. John's Prep alum. Not that I went there, but it's still a local guy. So beyond obviously being a legacy of a Boston legend, a Red Sox legend, a local guy, there's been a lot of negativity surrounding this story, simply because there are obviously going to be people who eat this thing up too much. That said, I'm not even considering that. I love it. I think this is great. I thought it was a special moment, and you can make fun of me all you want. I thought it was a special moment to see the elder Yaz throw the first pitch out to Mike Yastrzemski. Not passing the torch, but seeing a guy who was a Triple Crown winner, a part of that 67 Red Sox team, the Impossible Dream Team, which kind of changed the course of Red Sox history, I think. It brought in new fans, and really, from a marketability aspect as much as anything, grew that Red Sox brand, and that's kind of where you get the Red Sox Nation from, essentially. So the impact he had is undeniable. You have Mike Yastrzemski, a guy who's a journeyman, 29-year-old rookie. This was his first year in the MLB. He hit his 20th home run at Fenway Park on, what was it, Tuesday. And he's had a really good rookie campaign as an elder guy. It's kind of like a Daniel Nava type of emergence. But I just think it's great. I think it's awesome. I think this is one of the cool things about the sport. I love it when we see sons or grandkids of former players come out and really show up, and especially when it's someone who's a legend. I just thought it was nice. And more than thinking it's nice, I just hated the negativity surrounding this and how people wanted to poo-poo it and act like it wasn't that big of a deal. I understand, again, that people are going to overdo it and get a little bit too emotional about this. But again, I'm not considering that. This was awesome. This was a great moment for the Red Sox in an otherwise extremely disappointing year. Maybe not for the Red Sox, but for Red Sox fans, that is.
Okay, well, here's the thing. You had me for most of it, and then you lost me when you used the phrase passing the torch, because you hit
it's
on
not
it.
I was Yastrzemski.
I know you don't mean it, but so many people saw it as that, to the next generation. Carl Yastrzemski is one of the all-time great players to ever play this game. Mike Yastrzemski, is a 260 hitter. He's going to end up with about 20, hitting 260 with about 25 home runs. Cool. It's not passing the torch. It was a cool family moment. The first pitch certainly was cool, but they could have ended it at that. Everything else to me was over. The whole big deal about the home run, like a player hit a home run. If his last name wasn't Yastrzemski, if it was the original Yaz's daughter's son, and his last name wasn't Yastrzemski, everybody, oh, Yastrzemski homers at Fenway. That's not what it would be. Also, let's just talk, and I know we hit leadoff that first game, but I think that was more ceremonial than anything else. I looked at the lineup. He normally hits about sixth or seventh. The most memorable moment of this Red Sox season is going to be in September when both teams are out of the playoffs, the San Francisco Giants left fielder and seven hitter hitting a home run in a meaningless game. That's going to be, and that maybe is what pissed me off about it more than anything else. If it had happened last year, it would have been a lot cooler. But the fact that it had to be so dressed up and it had to be so dramatized to make us interested in this team at this point in the season, it was just like, you know, it was sort of beating the dead horse. It was grinding it into us how pathetic this Red Sox season has been. Maybe that's why it rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, I think you're oversimplifying it that it's a seven hitter hitting a home run. It's again, it's the way that I would put it is imagine who would be a good comparison.
Yes,
I guess.
If Brady's grandkid came and played at Gillette, that would be
not
cool.
Not even Brady. Right. Brady's too much because I think Brady has a better legacy than someone like Carl Yastrzemski.
Yes, to his generation is what he was probably the greatest.
Well, Bill Russell was pretty big, although he might have been
later than Russell. I'm trying to think like the same time. Bird or Yaz? I don't know, actually. That was I'd ask my dad that.
At least Bird different. Yaz just the thing about Yaz is he had the Triple Crown year, of course, but overall longevity is what kind of boosted his overall numbers. Larry Bird was the opposite. He had back problems and he couldn't play as long as a lot of other guys.
Just to go back to the Brady thing, if Brady's grandkid came and played at Gillette or whatever stadium it is at that point, and maybe that was some of it too, it's the same stadium, because 40 years from now, Patriots aren't going to be playing at Gillette Stadium. 20 years from now, they might not be playing.
The Fenway Park aspect plays a role for sure.
But even still, you know, Brady's grandkid coming back to play the Patriots. If the Pats are, you know, 2-12 and it's the end of the season, they're out of it. Yeah, it's going to be a little annoying that suddenly we're supposed to care about this because of that. Now, I'll say this.
You will love it.
I would, but I don't think most people would. I will say this, though. If Mike Yastrzemski was, say, signed by the Red Sox, I'm more interested. Now I'm interested. Let's go. Yeah. Like, that to me would be the intriguing thing. Let me see Yastrzemski on the back of a Red Sox jersey. Let's see if they let him wear number 8. Like, that kind of thing. That's where you interest me with these kind of stories. Him just coming back here for 3 games at the end of a meaningless season, it's cool. The first pitch was cool. After that, to me, whatever. Now, let's say the Red Sox trade for him this offseason, which honestly would not be a bad idea. They kind of need a power bat in the outfield after they lose JD and Mookie. now I'm interested a little bit. That'd be kind of cool. If Mike Yastrzemski played for the Red Sox, like that's where you get me with this sort of thing. Get him in the Red Sox uniform, and then I care 10 times as much as I do right now.
And that would definitely be awesome. One more aspect I think that plays a role in this: you have the last name, obviously. You have the Massachusetts connection at Fenway Park. Grandfather was there, throws the first pitch, legend and whatnot. They also have very similar swings. So it is a nostalgic thing. You saw the side to side. That's back, pretty awesome.
But that's not surprising, because Carl taught him how to swing, taught him how to hit.
He did to an extent, for sure. Yeah, and there's also the genetic aspect, and I think that probably plays a role. But it's a cool story. I think it's a cool story. If you don't get into the riffraff and people who just take everything to the extremes, it's a cool story. At its core. And that's how I want to see it, because you know what? I'm sick of being negative all the time. I need a break.
All right. If you want to talk about something positive and fun, we'll close it on this note. So where do we even begin with this?
I don't think it's positive or fun. I think it's terrifying and negative.
Well, okay. It's one of these stories that is very fun until it is very much not. Can we say it like that?
Yes, I think that's a good way to put it.
It's very fun until it's very much not fun. And that is the whole UFO thing that's been going on the last couple of days. Quick summary. There's this video from 2004 of Navy fighter pilots who see what they describe as 40-foot-long Tic Tacs doing these impossible aerial maneuvers over the ocean during a training run. That footage is leaked by, was it the New York Times, right? The Times or Washington Post? I think it was the New York Times. Doesn't matter. That footage is leaked in 2017. Everybody makes a big deal about it, but it was never confirmed to be actual Navy footage. Now, a couple days ago, the Department of Defense comes out and says, yes, those are they don't actually call them UFOs. It's you something else. It's you and two other letters. But they may say, yes, that's our footage. Yes, those are unidentified flying objects, not in the alien term, but just in the strictest definition of they were objects that were flying. They do not know what they were. And then this all coincides with Friday, tomorrow, when we're recording this, is that stupid-ass raid on Area 51 when a couple thousand people are going to get themselves killed by the government. So are they here? They might very well be here. It's certainly starting to feel like, if you didn't believe it before, and I always sort of have, but, you know, now these last couple days, yeah, they're here.
Well, just a little background.
It's just this, time for Halloween, by the way.
This story is not from like yesterday. I don't believe. I think this video.
The video was from 2004. It was leaked in 2017. What was confirmed earlier this week that we didn't know before until Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever it was confirmed, there were a couple key things. One, it is actual Naval Department of Defense footage. This was not something somebody mocked up and leaked and made a joke of. Two, it's not the Navy or whoever, the Department of Defense, didn't say, oh yeah, that's our footage, but those are weather balloons, or that those are experimental aircraft, or those are whatever, dust on the screen. The third thing that came out that's flying the most under the radar to me of all of this is the Department of Defense confirmed that this video was never, ever supposed to be declassified. They only declassified it because it leaked to the New York Times. This was never – it's not one of these things where, oh, we'll declassify it in 50 years. We'll declassify it in 100 years. This was never meant to be seen by civilians. And we didn't know that until 2 days ago. So that to me – like those three things to me are – like that's all – that all completely changes the narrative to me. I don't know how you feel. To me, that completely changes the narrative.
Well, I mean, of course, they know stuff that we don't. If you ever heard of Bob Lazar, we've probably mentioned his name on this podcast before, honestly.
Not related to Evan, by the way.
Not related to Evan Lazar, of course. It's same great last name, different families. He talks about his time in Area 51 and the things he saw, like anti-gravity machines or gravity machines, and which he knows as a scientist. Nobody on this planet has ever been able to come up with, at least to his knowledge. So they have technology, according to Lazar, that we do not know about. I tend to believe him, given the interviews I've heard with the guy. I have not seen the documentary yet, which I have to, but it's going to be slanted, of course. There's definitely some stuff that the government knows of in regard to extraterrestrial or technology that we're just not aware of, or UFOs.
They definitely have technology we don't know about, but the question is it extraterrestrial? You know, there were a bunch of UFO sightings in the 70s around the New Mexico area. People were convinced it was a UFO. There were pictures, yada, yada, yada. And then it turned out to be the F-1 Blackhawk. So what people saw, there was no – it was literally an unidentified flying object. We didn't know what it was.
Yes.
People had said there's no current aircraft that can fly that fast, that can move that way. All of those things were true, but it turned out to be a secret military aircraft. So that's where we're at now, is essentially, are these things secret military aircrafts that the military is more comfortable just saying, yeah, we don't know what that is, it fueling the alien speculation, or is it actually something from another world?
Yeah,
is there a third option that we can't even comprehend?
Well, I think the other option is it's a foreign military that's on our West Coast. That's kind of surveying.
That's actually way more reasonable than what I was going to say the third option was.
Okay. I think that's
– I was going to say, is it mole people from the center of the earth?
It could be crab people.
Yes, it could be crab people. Who says that this other life form necessarily has to exist in space? How many – science fiction things are there about people living in the center of the earth that we don't know about? And maybe they're sending stuff out to look at us.
Hey, it might be a thing. I don't know. I would not put it out of the question. It's
makes a lot more sense though.
Yeah. I think if anything outside of like an extraterrestrial thing, it's a foreign country, probably like a Russia, or maybe China, that has technology that we are not aware of. But I also find that hard to believe, because the intel that a country like the U.S. has, I mean, they should be able to kind of catch on to anything that these right. foreign countries are doing. So I don't know. I've subscribed to the theory. I haven't subscribed to it, but I'm open to it, that we're living in a simulation, and that we were put here by aliens, because, I mean, like, we live in just the most bizarre times, and the human existence is such a strange thing that, like, it would be just as logical as anything else, right? So who knows? Who knows? If it's aliens, it's aliens. I just hope they don't come down here and take over. I want to live in ignorance. That's what I wish I could do. But now we know that there are UFOs out there, and it's impossible. So
the one thing I'll say about the aliens, not to get too political, but we know how the current president can at times be a little loose-lipped.
Sure. That's one way to put it.
Don't you think he would have told us if they were aliens, like, already? Like, don't you think he already would have been like, yeah, so I was talking to the aliens the other day. Or, like, you wouldn't believe how amazing these aliens are we have in Area 51. Don't you think he would have let something slip by now?
Well, don't you think that – well, here's the thing. There could be – there's people who think there's a shadow government. Some of those people are named Alex.
So maybe, like, he's not informed. Maybe they're
so maybe, maybe they're like, we can't let this guy know that there's aliens, because he'll tell people.
That's a very good point. That's a very strong point.
I think that is more likely. I think that the government knows something. I think that, you know, there's always been the theory of the shadow government and the establishment. And that's not a right or left thing. That's just more of a paranoia thing that people have. Yeah. So, and hey, listen, that could absolutely be true. And if there are... you know, there is evidence, and there is the intelligence gathered that there are aliens that have been here or are currently surveying us, or we're surveying them. I wouldn't be shocked that they just were like, let's just not tell Don. All right, let's just keep this away from Donnie. And then we'll just keep doing what we're doing, try to make progress, chip away at this thing. And, you know, he'll just be ignorant to this one fact. That's probably what it is, if I had to guess, if the alien thing is correct, because I think I side with you. I think Trump would be like, you know what? No, I'm telling people about this.
Not even on purpose, maybe by accident.
He could. It could slip out. Maybe at a debate. Just be like, listen, there's aliens, and if you want to live, vote for me. Maybe that comes out in the 2020 election. Who knows? That'd be fun.
I mean, if somebody ran on the platform of if you elect me, I will tell you if there are aliens and instantly resign, that person might win if they had a good vice president.
Yeah.
That person might win. They might get assassinated by, you know, the government first.
Maybe he's been threatened.
Maybe. That's a good point.
Well, that could have been the JFK thing.
Before we go down this government conspiracy hole, all that. Area 51 raid, 100,000 people expected to show up, over or under?
Oh, under. Come on. Way under.
It's going to be under, but I think it's going to be more than we expect. I think we're going to be surprised by the number. I really do.
If I had to put a ballpark on it, I'd say 500 to 1,200.
I think there's a chance you get near the five digits, because there's now going to be like a music festival going on, like, right down the road, specifically, like, based around this. And you're going to have a bunch of people go to, like, promote stuff. And I think you could touch five digits. I wouldn't be shocked.
Maybe. That'd be a lot to handle. So meanwhile, we'll see.
This thing has been super publicized. Not that anybody would get into Area 51. They'd be murdered the second they crossed that boundary. But this has been a thing for what now? 3 months? This was a thing like June?
Yeah.
Wouldn't they have moved all the aliens already?
You think so? Well, I think they would have done that a while ago, because Area 51 has been something people have known about. I mean, there's a damn baseball team named after it.
That's a conspiracy theory, too, is that the aliens were moved like a couple years ago to some place in Ohio.
So. Which is probably, I mean, if I were the government, that's what I would do personally.
I don't know. So, I keep the moon.
You keep the distance. Yeah. Okay. That's a good theory too. Yeah. Maybe. Why
do you think we haven't been back to the moon?
What was that?
Why haven't we been back to the moon? Maybe because there's some stuff up there that they're just going up there and handling on their own. They don't need us to see.
On the dark side?
Either side, I can't see the front of the moon that clearly.
Yeah, but people would find it. You got telescopes these days. You can figure it out.
Yes, yeah, that's true. All right, on that note. That was a good conversation.
I enjoyed it.
We'll have to recap the Area 51 storming next week if our alien overlords let us. Actually, let's end it on this note, because I did see this was trending on Twitter today. somebody had a thread going of like all their favorite like signs from The Simpsons. It's not a sign from The Simpsons, but one of my favorite lines, and it applies. You're a Simpsons guy, right?
Yes. When I was younger, I used to watch it all the time, but I haven't in years, to be honest.
So it's an older episode. The episode where Homer goes to space.
Okay.
The space shuttle. You seen that one?
It rings a bell.
And he breaks open the ant farm, and the ants start floating in front of the camera. And Ken Brockman thinks that there's alien ant overlords coming to Earth. And he just instantly surrenders. So let me just say, as we close this podcast, if there's any aliens about to take over Earth listening, I surrender to our new alien overlords, and please let us keep doing this show next week.
I'm grabbing a gun and killing some aliens if they're coming.
Yeah, you can give me aliens. You can give me a new co-host. That's fine. I'm not tied to them as long as I get to keep doing the show. All right. On that note, we'll wrap it up. If there is a show next week and there is no alien attack, you can find it on clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. For Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on the next one. Bye.